Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.
We have to be really careful about how we tell stories, how we ask about stories.
I want this anonymous forever, or I want it to be released after I'm dead.
It's not always been easy to do the research because, you know, terminology has changed over the years. And, you know, you went from being called a sexual deviant to a homosexual to now we use all of the letters of the alphabet.
I'm Sarah Fenske. This is St. Louis on the Air. Today, a new virtual exhibit launches at the Missouri History Museum. It's called Gateway to Pride, and it aims to uncover the often untold stories of St. Louis's LGBTQIA communities. And joining us today to talk about it is Sharon Smith. She's the curator of civic and personal identity and the content lead for this exhibit. Sharon, welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. It's good to be here.
And we're also joined today by historian Stephen Brawley. He's the founder of the St. Louis LGBT History Project and also a member of the Missouri History's LGBTQIA Advisory Board. So, Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
So, Sharon, let's start with you. I understand this Gateway to Pride exhibit was set to begin displaying last summer. Let me guess, COVID is one factor in why that changed.
Yes, COVID is the only factor.
it's a fair guess, isn't it?
That's correct. We were going to do this launch as a sort of an opportunity to tell the folks about the initiative in a small atrium presentation in our lower level of the museum. And it was going to open in June of 2020. And when COVID hit, we, of course, knew at that point we had to all be quarantined. We weren't sure when we would even open up the museum again. Mm-hmm. So we had to really sort of turn on a dime and figure out how we might still get this information out there, because we need, this is really a grassroots movement to get the public involved in this effort of collecting all of these stories, the artifacts, the photos, whatever it is. And, you know, that can only happen if they know that we need it. So, So we turned and did this virtual exhibit, first of our kind.
And I understand this virtual exhibit is in part a call to action for something bigger you have planned that doesn't happen till 2024. What is that going to be?
Yes, so that is the large exhibit that we are planning in one of our major 6,000 square foot galleries. So, you know, we always think several years out for these things, and it takes time to make all of those pieces put together. And in this case, because it's a collecting initiative as well, it gives us time to gather artifacts and the stories and everything that goes into this initiative. And so we're looking forward to that by, you know, gathering all this information. And, you know, it's a large grassroots effort. I mean, we need everybody to help us with this story.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, what kind of things are you looking for as you look to tell this story?
Yeah, so, you know, just about anything that you can think of. I mean, when you think about an exhibit, you think about photographs, you think about artifacts, you think about media pieces that might be production pieces. Are you still there?
Yes. Sharon, can you still hear me? I believe Sharon can't hear
me.
Oh, there she is. Sorry. Sharon. Yes.
It's also COVID.
Yes.
So we're also looking for artifacts, and those things can be, you know, just almost anything. You know, people are cleaning out their closets these days. And so we're asking people to think about, you know, events they might have gone to, things they might have picked up, archival documents, letters, you know, whatever you can think of. And we'll be able to then tell you how those things fit. I don't want to jump into your sort of way of getting Stephen into this conversation, but honestly, it's with Stephen's help that we got this program started and this whole initiative. And, you know, it's because a lot of people went to him and just gave him stuff. And we call it stuff, but it really is the really actual heart of the history of this group of communities, is because, you know, they kept things that were important to them, and we wanted them to be able to tell those stories through the documents and the artifacts.
So, Steve, that is a perfect segue to bring you into this. People were giving you stuff. Is that as a part of this St. Louis LGBT History Project that you've been doing now for some years?
Sure, yeah. In 2007, I started the project. And again, it was grassroots. It was an effort to find a way to preserve and promote our local history. So along the way, I started looking at ways to partner with other organizations. And of course, the History Museum was a natural partner. So I've been partnering with the museum since 2013 formally, and have worked closely with Sharon and the entire team over there. They do an amazing job. I've learned a lot about the museum business. And, you know, we collaborated on the 250th anniversary of St. Louis exhibit, on the Route 66 exhibit. And, you know, Sharon and Dr. Francis Levine, the president of the Historical Society, have made a strong commitment to diversity. And, you know, the exhibits, you know, that they have done have promoted that. And now with the Gateway to Pride Initiative, a real thoughtful advisory group has been put together, very diverse, lots of voices, lots of ways to get stories from lots of different members of the community that their stories haven't been told.
Hmm. So Sharon, that leads me to, you know, some of these stories that haven't been told. What are some of the challenges in getting the untold stories, the true reality of what was happening on the ground?
Yeah, that's a good point, Sarah, because, you know, this is a community where often people's identity needs to remain hidden in some fashion, right? Especially over the years. And so we have to be really careful about how we tell stories, how we ask about stories. It's not always been easy to do the research because, you know, terminology has changed over the years. And, you know, you went from being called a sexual deviant to a homosexual to now we use all of the letters of the alphabet, right? To include everybody's way that they identify. And so that has been hard. And then just trying to get into those communities and find the people who have a story to tell or want to tell a story. That's also been sort of what we've done with Stephen, has been to connect with the community. You know, MHS hasn't always been at the table, but Stephen has for a long time. And so he has pointed us in the direction of people or organizations or just all kinds of ways that we can begin to go into those communities and make sure that they are aware that we want to tell their stories. And then that willingness really opens up, and it's been really fruitful.
Steve, I'm curious how you deal with people who've passed away. They may have friends or loved ones that want to tell their story, and their story is such an important part of our history, but maybe when they were alive, this wasn't something that they wanted everyone to know. How do you handle somebody who's in that situation?
Yeah, that's very tricky, and you know, you have to handle it on a case-by-case basis. Normally, you know, I've gotten calls throughout the years, someone has passed away, and their stuff was being thrown away. And so, you know, we were able to, you know, get those items safely, you know, from the trash bin. Sometimes people will say they want things anonymous. Sometimes family members or friends are willing to do an oral history or talk about the person. But, you know, often we've done some oral histories with our partners where, you know, the person will say, I want this anonymous forever, or I want it to be released after I'm dead. You know, lots of different scenarios exist, but, you know, it is a very sensitive, you know, situation. We do it on a case-by-case basis.
Are you finding that, you know, as things continue to change in the world and as there continues to be more and more acceptance of this, that people are more open to doing an oral history or having their name used in their oral history, that sort of thing, Steve?
I would say in the last, you know, since we've been doing this, you know, on a large scale since 2007, I think people hearing and seeing things being done in a way that's, I use the word appropriate, but respectful. We're not trying to tell a sensational story or embarrass anyone or divulge some family secret. And so I think the more people see, like the exhibit that's, you know, we're going to be launching tonight, the more people see things being put out there in the community and it's being done in a thoughtful, respectful way, I think that does help lessen apprehension.
Well, that's great to hear. Sharon, I'm sure that makes your job easier, too. People are starting to realize, hey, this is a good longstanding partner. This isn't just somebody coming in and trying to go for the sensational here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's been really key is, you know, this large advisory group that we have sort of formulated. They're all really important to us because they all have connections, but they also, many of them have been in the community for years and years, and they kind of know, you know, how to help us in that regard. And so it is definitely something that we want to enter into with the most sensitivity, and it requires, as Stephen said, a case-by-case understanding of each person's desires.
We're talking today to Sharon Smith. She's a curator of civic and personal identity at the Missouri Historical Society. She's also the content lead for this new virtual exhibit that goes up today at the Missouri History Museum. And we're joined by Stephen Brawley, who's the founder of the St. Louis LGBT History Project. He's also a member of the Historical Society's LGBTQIA Advisory Board. I want to talk a bit about this exhibit that is going up today. And I want to talk a little bit about some of these artifacts. Sharon, I understand one of them is something you collected way before there was a dedicated initiative for this. This is a homemade foam core coffin. What was the significance of that?
Yeah, this is maybe one of my favorite pieces, only because, you know, back in the day in 2004, when as a curator who wasn't quite sure where the History Museum would ever be to, you know, produce an exhibit on the lesbian and gay community, as we were calling them back in that day, we were calling the community back then. I thought, you know what, this piece, though, has such a story. This is about the ACT UP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. And, you know, it was about AIDS and the whole notion surrounding, you know, that very, very scary period of our lives. And the piece was, you know, not in the best of shape. And so I thought, oh boy, they're going to tell me about that. That's going to be a problem when, you know, I take it in and the collections people are like, but it's not all in the best. And, you know, I just thought, no, this piece needs to be here. And without any idea when I would ever see it on the floor of the museum, I took it in. And it is a wonderful piece. Greg Gerhardt is the donor. And Greg, we've told his story several times, but he marched in many of the ACT UP demonstrations in the city and carried that coffin. And it's very light, you know, so it's not
foam core.
It's foam core, right? But it is just a really, really significant piece. That same year, we took in a pride flag, a piece of a pride flag that I also thought I would never see. And Stephen witnessed that piece go up in 2014 on the floor of the museum when we did our 250 exhibit. The museum has come a long way. Mm-hmm. And I thank Dr. Levine and the staff because they have been able to help us get to this point.
Stephen, is there any artifact that's been gathered up to this point that stands out to you as just feeling significant or having a good story?
Oh, sure. You know, working in collaboration with the museum, one of the one piece in particular, Rodney Wilson, who was a teacher, or, you know, is an educator in the region, but hit back in the 90s, he was a teacher in Melville, and he came out, and what was a national story that he came out to his students. And so he donated a poster that one of his students made that was a recreation of a March on Washington poster. And he had the students do this, you know, exercise. And so he donated one of the posters that one of his students made. So, you know, it was very brave of him. He was is also credited as the founder of what we now know as LGBTQIA History Month in October. He was the force behind that initiative. And so, you know, it connects lots of stories, education and, you know, social, you know, justice. Lots of different stories go into this very simple homemade poster that a student made back, you know, in the 90s here in St. Louis.
That's so cool. And Sharon, in addition to these artifacts, you've also got a bunch of oral histories featured in this exhibit. I understand one of them is from Jeanette Mott Oxford. In 2004, she made, uh, they... Zur made history as the first openly lesbian member of the Missouri State Legislature. Jeanette is such a force of nature. What kind of story is told in that oral history?
Yeah, so, you know, first I have to say that I have an assistant whose name is Ian Darnell, and Ian came to us late in 2019 to be a part of this project, and Ian has conducted all of those oral histories that we'll find on that website or the virtual experience this evening. And he spent, I think he said, 6 hours with Jeanette as they talked about so much of Jeanette's history. And you're right, there is a lot there. I can't even begin to tell you because I wasn't a part of that whole process that he spent with Jeanette. I will say that when we first sort of outed the museum, if you will, I sort of like to play on that word. Whenever I first said to our first audience that we had this collecting initiative and I had the permission to out the museum and say, hey, we were going to collect things, in that first audience, Jeanette Mott Oxford was sitting there, as I said to the group, you know, if you have materials that you would like to donate. And Jeanette came up to me and said, I have my materials that I would like to donate. And I was so, so excited. So we have some papers, some artifacts, a nameplate for when Zur was in the ethics committee, I believe, in the House. And so there are some really, really significant pieces that tell Jeanette's story. But the oral history is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot there.
And so you said 6 hours worth of conversation. Is that something that then is distilled down or can people listen to that entire thing through this site?
Well, through the site, you'll hear, I think there might be 11 clips from Jeanette's stories. And so then there are three other oral histories where there are similar numbers of clips. The whole 6 hours will not be heard at this point, but at some point later down the road somewhere, we will be able to link those to the larger work. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Stephen, in our final minutes here, we talked about how this virtual exhibit is sort of a call to action that's gathering more for this bigger exhibit that's going to open in 2024. So when we talk about untold stories, are there any bits of local history that you know is out there, but you still haven't been able to document yet, and this is on your must-get list?
Yes, of course. We, you know, think about this all the time in terms of stories that are either lost or untold. And so, You know, especially in the African American community, we know it was an oral history tradition. There may not be artifacts, but I, you know, have a lot of friends in the community who have, you know, told me that they have elders in the community that, we're talking to and trying to, hopefully build trust and comfort, so they would be maybe interested in telling stories that, we know that have not been told. Especially in the trans community, we know there are lots of stories that have not been told. St. Louis was a very important medical center, of course, that still is today, but back in the 60s and 70s. And there were lots of surgeries being performed that folks would be coming in from across America for their sexual identity procedures and transformations. And so, you know, we know those stories are there, and so we're just hoping by the more we get the word out, the more we can find out who has stories and how we can have people be comfortable telling them.
Well, I hope if anyone is listening and they have a story that fits the bill for what Stephen is looking for, I hope you will reach out and get this recorded for history. I also hope people will check out this exhibit tonight. Sharon, when will this go live and where can people find it?
Yeah, so we have a launch event this evening that is completely full, as Zoom is. You know, normally we would just say, oh, well, come along. But after that, you can just go to the website and you'll be able to find it somehow on that site. And I think that we'll be able to put that up pretty easily. If you just go to mohistory.org, you'll be able to find it. It is called Gateway to Pride, so you'll just be able to find it through that. And the link will be right there. And then you can enter it and just really play in it. And we really do want to hear people. There's lots of opportunities where it will say, share your story with us. And we really do mean that. Like we want feedback. We want, you know, opportunities to understand more of what you want to see, or what people want to see, what we might have missed, what they think we might have done that they need to correct. You know, we might make mistakes. I guess we will at some point.
Well, I hope people will check that all out. That, again, is at mohistory.org. It will be live tonight. And Sharon Smith, Curator of Civic and Personal Identity at the Missouri Historical Society, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
And Stephen Brawley, founder of the St. Louis LGBT History Project, thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.